everybody. We're back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. It's a lovely June 17th, 2014 here in New York City. I wanted to tell you a number of things. Responsible Eating and Living, my nonprofit organization, has been in the news. So in the American Vegan magazine, are you familiar with the American Vegan Society? Gosh, they've been around a really long time, and we are in their summer 2014 edition with some recipes and a nice picture of the swinging gourmets. And I'll be talking about that in a little bit. And it was just really exciting to see that in their magazine. This is an organization run by Anne and Freya Dinshaw, and Anne will be back on the show next month. She's got a book out that was authored by herself and her father posthumously, actually. Her father passed about 14 years ago, and it's called Powerful Vegan Messages. So I'm looking forward to that. And then we were also in the San Diego Jewish Journal, a beautiful magazine, and one of our new recipes, a vegan gefilte fish for Passover, which is really a great recipe for any time of the year. It's a nice little appetizer. Is in their beautiful color magazine. So that was exciting. And we are in another magazine called Range, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, because first I want to talk about the Lone Vegan documentary, Preaching to the Fire, with my co-producer and director of that program, Gary DeMattei. He has over 30 years in the performing arts as an actor, director, producer, writer, and filmmaker. Gary, how are you doing today?
Hello, Karen Hartglass. How are you?
It's good to be talking to you on It's All About Food.
It is all about food, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, everything is all about food.
That's right.
So when do we eat?
I'm starving.
I know.
Okay.
How are you? How's everything going today for you in New York City?
I'm exhausted.
You are?
Yes, we work very hard at Responsible Eating and Living.
Yes, we do.
Yes, people may know that Gary DeMattei is the co-founder of Responsible Eating and Living, so we do a lot of work here together. Now, I mentioned...
always fun and joyous work.
Joyous work. Yes.
Yeah.
Delicious, joyous work.
It is.
It is delicious. Now, I've been mentioning for weeks that there's this Lone Vegan documentary. I was invited to speak to 250 cattle producers before the bull sale at a feedlot in Yerington, Nevada, and Gary joined me. I was the lone vegan, and Gary was my side dish, tofu.
Yes, tofu. And I called you teriyaki. which was a play on kemosabe.
Right.
I just wanted to clarify that for people out there that didn't get it.
Yeah, a lot of people don't get a lot of things.
Oh yeah,
unfortunately. But you know, teriyaki, even tofu teriyaki, is not always vegan, because there could be ingredients in the teriyaki that aren't vegan, so you have to be careful.
Well, I'm completely plant-based, so that would mean that I am the vegan version of tofu teriyaki.
Nevada, and I spoke to 250 cattle producers, and when we came back, we decided it was too incredible of an event, and we had to do a documentary about it and tell the story.
Right.
And that's where you come in, Gary, telling the story.
Well, first of all, as you mentioned, it's just making any film or piece of theater or writing about anything, you really want to have a good story to tell. And this was an incredible story to tell, and it shouldn't be confused with being a part of the Kickstarter reward, because we actually funded the research that the Lone Vegan had to do in order to talk to 250 cattle producers in Yerington, Nevada with a Kickstarter program. And what I really want everyone to know is that this was something we did completely on our own, separate from that, as sort of a Valentine to not only those folks that participated in our Kickstarter, but also to everyone else out there who maybe isn't familiar with this plant-based movement that seems to be taking hold quite vigorously throughout the world and has been for quite some time. So it was also just a really great story to tell about the movement and all of the hardworking activists out there that are a part of that movement, yourself included, of course. And then this incredible story about you actually going away from the fold, as it were, and talking to the folks that are responsible for producing the animal products that are consumed by not only our country, but you know, around the world.
It feels a whole lot different preaching to the choir and preaching to the fire.
Yeah, and when I saw that as an objective, well, I wasn't objective, but you know, as an observer of that, trying to remain objective, it was an incredible story that had to be told. So we, when a filmmaker gets a hold of something like this, you have to figure out what your objective is in telling the story. And you should also, and any good writer will know this as well, or anyone that creates art will know that they always have someone in mind when they're writing whatever it is they're writing, or when they're making a film, that they want to either be reading it or to be watching it. And those that I had in mind were those that maybe aren't familiar with the plant-based movement, with what being a vegan is, and how I think that sort of was reflected with why Lucy Snyder, who is one of the lead characters of this
documentary, the feedlot owner,
right, who she really wanted to have her people, her choir, kind of meet face-to-face, which is why I think her intentions were not to throw you to the wolves, but to actually have the wolves actually take a good look at you and see that you're just like them, and
well,
they
you know,
are just like you.
One of the things that amazed me was she really believed she was doing good things. She thought she was treating her animals well, and she thought if we would go and see the feedlot, we would change our mind about animal agriculture.
Right.
That really surprised me.
As you say in the film, it didn't change your mind.
It didn't happen.
No. And, you know, and I had a theory about that, too, that, you know, we tried to touch on in the film without really preaching, because I think it's a great story without preaching. One of the things that's interesting is that whenever I talk to folks who aren't vegan or don't have a plant-based diet that they've adopted completely, they always say to me, you know, and don't show me any of those videos or any of those horrible things from the slaughterhouses, because I'm just not going to look. It's not going to change my mind. I'm not going to stop eating meat. I just, you know, don't start showing me that stuff. And so who I had in mind when I was making this film was the audience out there that didn't want to see any horrific images of animal cruelty, but were maybe curious about taking the first step, because I know that a lot of times we can all turn off something that we don't want to see and not want to listen to the truth. And I swear in the film once, but I think for the most part, if you, you know, cover your ears at that one point, it's a rated G kind of experience the whole family can watch. And it's really a celebration of what good work is being done, not only in the vegan world, but also in, more specifically, in what we're trying to do at Responsible Eating and Living. And it was like a little Valentine to those folks that have been a part of not only It's All About Food, this great program that you are now in your
fifth year
of presenting all of these wonderful cookbook authors and nutritionists and doctors and people who want a better world, basically, and are hardworking. And this is really one of the only platforms that they can be heard. And so that's wonderful. So
I wanted to talk about, you mentioned how people don't want to see these films where animals are being slaughtered because they're really horrific. So what we show is the feedlot, the animals, the cows and the heifers and the bulls that are in these pens, standing on dirt, crowded together, and this is their day-to-day life. No, they're not being slaughtered there, but their life is misery. And you see that.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, and I know that there's a lot of smart people out there, and I don't need to narrate what, you know, why we did what we did, but what we wanted to show was, you know, they're taken from the pastures and they're put on dirt. And, you know, as you have mentioned in the film and on your show and in several other arenas throughout the country, if not the world, cattle should be grazing all day. And so what they do purposely is they put them on this plot of dirt so that they can't eat, and they feed them twice a day. And that really got to me because, you know, that was horrific enough just to connect the dots there and say, wow, I get it now. I get why they are on these barren strips of earth because they don't want them eating. They want them eating what they want to feed them. And that, to me, seemed horrifically cruel in and of itself. And the other thing is, if you really do want to tell a story, it should be told non-violently. You know, tell a story about violence, I feel it should be told in a non-violent way. I think there's just enough people out there that are smart enough to connect the dots to see what comes next. I mean, it's, you know, it's that little thing that's buried deeply in your subconscious that tells you, well, these are pretty cows, but they're going to go, you know, they're going to go off to slaughter, and then they're going to end up on my dinner table. And so I think this is always in someone's mind because I think people are intelligent, and they give, and, you know, and if they say they don't want to see it, that to me is a sign that they really do want to know more about it. So hopefully they'll watch this film and really get an idea of what these animals go through, and without having to see the violence, because activism in and of itself is a wonderful way to get a message out there, but it can also, in and of itself, have a lot of violence attached to it. And
yeah,
so,
I want to talk more about that because we see it all the time within our own community, this violence, this anger. If someone is promoting a campaign, a project, a vegan, let's say, and another vegan doesn't like the way they package it, then they start arguing and telling them what to do. Or another example is I posted this documentary on several Facebook groups, and I mentioned Robert Goodland because
right.
we talk about him in the film. I've interviewed him on this show. He unfortunately passed in December. He was called the voice or the conscience of the World Bank. He's an environmental assessment specialist, or he was, and put out some wonderful articles. And there are some people that just don't agree with what he had to say that are part of the vegan movement, and they just get really angry about it. And there's, it's great to have a discussion. It's great to have a conversation. It's great to have communication, but I'm not into the violence.
I'm glad you brought that up because that was also part of what you and I had talked about with respect to telling our story was we just wanted to have a conversation about what had happened, and so we brought it into the apartment and we called it Tea and 3C, and we kept it very low-key and very real because we wanted the audience to come into our lives and, you know, sit at our table and be a part of our group and, you know, feel at home with what we were trying to say. And so it's really important when you're telling a story, you go to the theater or you go to a film, what's wonderful is to sit around a table afterwards and discuss what it was that you just saw, if it had some sort of impact on you. And, you know, I think a nonviolent story is far more compelling than a story with a lot of graphic images of the horrific things that we all know are happening behind those walls in the slaughterhouses. And yes, you know, it's important to show that, but that's not what we're about at Responsible Eating and Living. And there are other groups that show that have the brave reporters that go out there and undercover and unmask these horrific conditions. But I personally feel that everyone knows what's going on in a slaughterhouse. And personally, as a filmmaker, I feel that I'm going to give credit where credit is due. People know that animals are being executed so that they can eat them. But what they don't probably know is that the amount of food that is grown to feed these animals that then get slaughtered and put on your table is ridiculous.
It's and so inefficient.
There should never, ever be a case of any nation going hungry because, and what we also try to do at Responsible Eating and Living, as you know, is we try to take these simple ingredients of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds, and turn them into these wonderfully delicious products that people will realize that if they just got back into their kitchens and started cooking again, or even started to go to some of these restaurants that are now popping up everywhere that produce plant-based foods, that they won't miss meat at all. As a matter of fact, they'll start to wake up, as I did 7 years ago, and say, wow, I can't believe I actually thought this stuff tasted good, because it's really all about the marketing. And that's the thing everyone in this nation, including me, before I switched to a plant-based diet, has really got to battle, and that is the marketing, the tremendous amount of money that goes into convincing everyone in the world that these products are tasty and good for you and, you know, something that you are supposed to have because you've worked hard all day and now it's time for you to kick back and, you know, eat that 42-pound bucket of, you know, flesh that has this wonderful barbecue sauce on it. So, and the barbecue sauce is normally made with plants. So, you know, of course, what you're tasting is this groovy barbecue sauce that's really wonderful and yummy, and the stuff underneath is just salted and sugared and a lot of fat that, you know, you think is the real reason why you're eating it and that you need it. But it as far as I'm concerned,
it's the barbecue sauce, and you came up with a great barbecue sauce that we use all the time.
It's always the sauce.
That's what the French made.
The French knew that, and that's why they took organs from inside a cow and that no one would dare eat and sauced them to this, you know, with this incredible, all these wonderful sauces and made them palatable, sort of.
Let's go back to Yerington for a minute. You were watching the panel and the debate and the questions afterwards. Did anything surprise you?
Yeah, everything surprised me. First of all, they didn't shoot you, and that was surprising. I was happy for that. And the other thing was that they listened to you, and they really got you.
They did listen.
They listened, and they appreciated you being there, proving that everyone is the same. And, you know, some of us are just caught in a trap where we have to do these things to make a living. And what you left them with, which was also really wonderful, was some ideas on what, you know, what industries are coming on the scene. And there was really so much more we wanted to say in the documentary, but we wanted to keep it to around 70 minutes. But you talked to them about a lot of products that you have also interviewed the folks that are responsible for these products on your show. Beyond meats and beyond eggs and things of that nature. But yeah, I was really surprised that they really, really listened and really appreciated you, and they all basically wanted to come up to you and talk to you afterwards. And I think there's a couple of things we say in the film that are very important. One of them is one woman asked you, where does God fit into all of this? And I think your answer was something that I thought was one of the objectives of the film, which was to say, well, why don't you explain it, because you're kind of
well, hard. I think if people want to know what I said, they should watch the documentary and find out. There's
a
teaser.
That's a great idea.
So if you want to know where it is, I'll repeat this a few times, but you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and scroll down the homepage, and you'll find a link to it. The link is responsibleeatingandliving.com/lonevegan.htm. And you can watch it at any time. It's 70 minutes. I would plan a movie night. And you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and look up our popcorn recipes and make some popcorn and watch the documentary.
Yeah.
But some of the other questions, you know, when I started my talk before the panel discussion began, I opened with a number of things, but one thing I said was, I get plenty of protein, and I get protein where your cows get their protein from plants. Because right away, I didn't want anybody asking me, where do you get your protein?
Right.
So I thought I covered that. But then they came up with, you know, other questions. You just can't answer them all at once, and they're always going to ask them. So they were concerned, would we get enough iron on a plant-based diet?
Right.
And could you grow enough leafy green vegetables if everybody was eating plants and not animals? And they really, you know, we looked at those mountains of feed. There was corn, there was brown rice hulls, there was ground up almond hulls that they feed these animals. And if you could replace those things, or at least feed those things to people, maybe not the almond hulls, but certainly the corn, and people were eating brown rice instead of white rice, they wouldn't have those mountains of the outside kernel of the brown rice to feed the animals. And we wouldn't even be growing the things we're growing if we weren't feeding them to animals. We could feed all the wonderful foods that people need to eat and just be done with it. It would be efficient, and we wouldn't be growing misery.
And another point we make in the film is that there are 70 billion, that's billion with a B,
Land animals. That doesn't even include fish.
Right, that are slaughtered per year.
Right.
Per year, which was staggering. And
and 7 billion people on the planet.
7 billion people on the planet. So they're growing food to feed 70 billion land animals per year, which then get slaughtered, and there are 7 billion people on the planet. So if they grow, I think what we try and point out is that there's enough, we could grow enough food to feed the entire world.
You know, and people will give you all kinds of arguments. They'll say, well, the big chunk of that 70 billion number is chickens, although I think there are about 10 billion cattle that are grown, something like that. Anyway, the numbers are outrageous, and a lot of them are chickens that are smaller and die early, but we still could grow so much food for people and have lots of land left over if we weren't killing animals. And I just wanted to mention there was an article in The Guardian that came out today about chicken. And I think of my dad when I read articles like this. If you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem. And the problem, they say, is it's about Great Britain and their Food Standards Agency, and they're recommending not to wash chicken before cooking it, because when you wash the chicken, many people may know this, if they have that salmonella in it, you spread it all over the place, you get it on your utensils and your sink and on your cutting board, and it wreaks havoc and spreads, and you get really sick from it. And it's the Campylobacter, actually, that's contaminating the kitchen. And so they're telling people, don't wash your chicken before you cook it. And I'm thinking, don't eat chicken. End of problem.
Right.
Crazy.
That's another objective of the film is, you just have to watch the film, everybody. You need to, because it's a great film. And we're bringing it around to different venues now, and we're entering it in different costs. I don't know if you say contest or what you say, but
there are documentary festivals or submissions.
Right.
Yeah.
But we want you all to see it. It's our gift to you. It's absolutely free, like everything else we do online. And we keep our doors open at Responsible Eating and Living with donations from viewers like you. So
yeah. So of course we want to say that if you do like the film, we'd really appreciate your support with a donation, because we could use it and put good use.
And the other thing is what you were just saying is, I think there's going to be a lot of arguments about a lot of different things, because that's what people want to do, is they want to find one little thing that they can then pinpoint and then blow that up and make that about make that all about the discussion. And we have a tendency to be myopic. We for some reason don't lose that when we grow up. But 70 billion land animals, whether or not they're chickens or cattle or
pigs, a lot of pigs,
not even counting the fish, are being slaughtered each year to feed people. And if you want to try and dispute that number between the chickens and the hogs and the cows, I mean, that's fine. You can probably argue about that. But just the idea that we have that kind of violence going on day to day here throughout the world says a lot about why there is violence reflected in other areas of our lives. So I think as soon as we start eliminating the violence to all of our own creatures, not just human beings, but all living things, then I think
it'll be a nicer planet.
I think it'll be a nicer planet.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we wanted to say with the film.
Right.
Well.
Gary, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show with me today, and thank you for being the great storyteller that you are, creating and directing the Lone Vegan documentary, The Lone Vegan Preaching to the Fire.
My pleasure. Thank you for what you do as well.
Thank you. You're awesome. Talk to you later, Gary.
Talk to you later, Karen.
Bye-bye.